You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
If you're a cat owner like me, you realize a long time ago, we don't own them. They own us. Cats have never forgotten that they were once worshipped as gods in ancient Egypt. Though I've enjoyed the company of cats since I was a child and have been a veterinarian for over 20 years, I can't say that I fully understand what happens between their little ears. Their behavioral quirks can be mystifying. There are times we're tempted to say that they're behaving just like petulant children, doing something just to piss us off. But are they really? With the help of a board-certified veterinary behaviorist like Dr. Stephanie Schwartz, we can hopefully decipher their actions and experience more pleasure from sharing our lives and homes with them. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Buster, you're telling me my dog food products can't go on your shelves?
That's right. Didn't pass one of my Petco certified nutrition checklists. Sorry, Wayne.
Who made these checklists?
Geniuses. Very smart guys.
Well, it's good enough for most grocery stores.
Do you see cheese puffs on my shelves? Mayonnaise? Soda pop?
No.
That's because I ain't running no grocery store, Wayne. Your pets will get better nutrition, I guarantee it. Petco, where the healthy pets go.
Enter the code DR10, DOCTOR, the number 10, and get 10% off any order. No minimum at Petco.com.
Whether they're big, small, hairy, or whatever, you're going to need gear for your feet. And Kids Foot Locker's got all the great shoes and gear that'll get you in the game.
Go to kidsfootlocker.com. Enter the code AFDOC1KF to get 10% off any order of $50 or more. Or enter the code AFDOC2KF to get 15% off any order of $75 or more at kidsfootlocker.com.
And cover those funky feet.
Would you like your business to reach out and invite in our audience? We have a brand new trademark concept called InfoSeeds. InfoSeeds are short 20-second seeds of information about your place of business, practice, or service. It's the best, most cost-effective way to invite us in. We only have a limited number of slots left. For more information, visit the website
PetLifeRadio.com.
Click on sponsorship information. There you can listen to a sample of InfoSeed. Remember, only a limited number of opportunities are available.
Hi, this is Tim Link, host of Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Join me as we feature interviews with best-selling pet-related authors, award-winning writers, journalists, and bloggers. And we'll tell stories about the animals and interesting topics about the animals in our lives. Each of the interviews will give you a first-hand knowledge about why the authors and writers chose a particular story, what the feature animals meant to them, and what has become of those animals that we've talked about. And of course, I'll also share stories from my own books, blogs, articles, and experiences. So be sure to join me and the writers and authors on Animal Rights.
Every week, on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com. Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Schwartz, thank you for being on the show today. There are so many questions I have about my own cats, and I'm sure the listeners have a lot of their own.
Well, I am so thrilled to be here. And did you know that I actually have an Egyptian Mao? You mentioned the cats that were worshipped way back when in ancient Egypt, and that breed is alive and well. And I actually have one living with me. I won't say that I own her because that wouldn't be right, would it?
No. So this is definitely that kitty who believes that you are there to pay the mortgage on her home. Or is it his home?
It's her home. Her name is Eden Serene. That's what she's aspiring to. But she isn't very. But I'm hoping that one day she will be. Serene, that is. But she is extremely majestic, beautiful cat, and extremely intelligent. There's, as you mentioned, a whole lot going on between those ears that we really don't know. But what we do know about cats is that they are much more complicated than we are, and I think certainly more complicated than dogs are. They have a very exquisite sense of smell. Their hearing is far more sensitive than we can possibly imagine. They feel vibrations. They see better than we do in the light and in the dark. And so their experience in life is much more rich than ours could ever possibly be. So they're already way ahead of the ball game as far as that's concerned.
Well, you definitely sound as though you are a passionate kitty owner, or one that is owned by cats. Now, we all have our stories how we got into veterinary medicine, but why did you decide to go into such a specialized field like behavior?
Well, that's a really interesting question. I don't know how interesting the answer will be, but I think it is kind of the way I see the world. I'm very visual. And I was always fascinated at finding answers to questions and why we do what we do, and why birds sing, and why different birds sing differently. And so it was part of my own natural curiosity. I think a good part of it, too, was that I was following in my own dad's footsteps. My father, who died almost 5 years ago now, was a physician, and he specialized in family practice. And specifically in family therapy. So he was, I think, inclined to see things from a behavioral perspective, and I probably inherited that from him and also learned that from him.
That's marvelous. Now, I think a lot of people would be surprised to learn that there are cat behaviorists, because, you know, how can you adjust a cat's behavior? You know, they're going to do their own thing, or that there's nothing that you can really do to change their behavior. And what's the difference between a cat behaviorist and a cat trainer? Why don't we start with that one first? What's the difference between a behaviorist and a trainer?
Okay. Well, I'm not just a cat behaviorist. I should probably first clarify that. I am a veterinary behaviorist. And a veterinary behaviorist is a veterinarian who has done extra studies and qualified with extra credentials to be board certified by the American College of Veterinary Behaviorists. And we are a very specialized group. There are only about 50 of us in the world. And we are the parallel to human psychiatry. So all the disorders, emotional, psychiatric, with or without underlying medical issues, all fall into the kind of cases that we see. Some will have medical problems concealed beneath the behaviors, and others will be purely from the neck up with some kind of psychosocial imbalance, for example. Now, having said that, I'm a veterinarian with a board-certified specialty in behavior. How can we then compare that to someone who is a cat trainer? Now, anybody can be a cat trainer. There are dog trainers and cat trainers, and there's no special training to do either of those things. A lot of people just do it because they love it and feel that they have a gift or a talent for that. But that does not make them qualified, and it does not mean that they have any special training themselves to do it.
So you are first and foremost a veterinarian, a medical professional, and trying to say, is this a behavioral issue, a psychological, medical issue, and having all of this come together in a package where you can address all of these concerns?
That's right. Because so many behavior problems do indeed have an underlying medical disorder, it's always important to start from that point to make sure that there is nothing that we're missing that we can fix with a medication or a blood test. You know, we need to find out if there is something that we have to deal with medically that will then clear up the behavior problem. Almost every medical problem has an overlying behavioral presentation. So things like lethargy, not eating, doesn't greet me at the door, seems to be hiding all the time, isn't grooming herself, not using the litter box. These are all behavioral presentations of an underlying medical problem. Once we have eliminated the possibility with some confidence that there is no underlying medical problem, we can then say, now we need to consider this as a behavioral disorder and deal with it as a behavior problem.
I think that's so important because so many times people bring in a pet to me, a cat or a dog, saying that, you know, it has some strange, as you're mentioning, being lethargic, not wanting to eat, being reclusive, hiding in the closet. And they think, well, maybe it's because we had a family member who just went off to college and the cat is just pining for this person. And then in reality, when we do a workup, we find that there is a kidney problem or it's a diabetic or something else is going on. So it is really important for people not just to boohoo it and saying, oh, it's nothing important. They really should bring these differences to a veterinarian's attention. Would you agree?
Absolutely. I think that there is nobody who knows their pets better than the pet parent. And we know every little nuance and idiosyncrasy that our loved ones have, and our pets are no different. If it smells and looks like something's wrong, then it probably is. We do know, for example, in the example that you used, that that stress will exacerbate an underlying medical problem. So, for example, a pet who is really bonded to their college-age brother or sister leaving the nest and then stops eating, well, maybe that kidney problem that you mentioned was exacerbated because of the stress that they endured because of the separation. It's also possible that it was there all along and that they just finally decompensated with the stress of the absence of this person that they love. It's always very important to make sure that there's no medical problem that needs to be dealt with any behavior problem. Once that's done, we can then move on and say, looking at lifestyle issues or at trauma in the past or different contributing factors that set the pet up to misbehave, we can fix those and make life better for everybody involved. Sometimes we need medication, psychoactive medication, or another medication if there's a medical problem, and that will also help in many cases.
One of the things that you brought up, and I'll oftentimes mention to people when they bring a pet in, a cat, for instance, that has inappropriate elimination, it's pooping, peeing outside of the cat box. And I'll bring up this question about stress, and they look at me like I am crazy. It's like, what do you mean? This cat has it so easy. It lives in a house where it gets fed twice a day. You know, I love it. I do this and that. How can this cat be stressed? What is stressful to a cat?
Well, stress by definition is change. Anything that changes is stressful. Whether that's good or bad, it's stressful. Being acquired as a kitten and moving to your first home is stressful. If you move to a new home with the owner, that's stressful. If somebody comes or leaves the home, that's stressful. If there's construction, it's stressful. If they change food, that's stressful. If they move the box, that's stressful. So anything that changes in your environment or in the social dynamics or makeup of the people or other house space that you live with as a cat is going to stress you. Having said that, let's go back to what you mentioned about the litter box and how people react to stress in the litter box. And let me just say for the record that God did not create cats with a gene to make them use litter boxes. It is completely not normal for cats to use a litter box.
And thankfully they do most of the time.
But they're just doing us a favor, and let's just put it out there. They are just doing us a favor. And anything that gives them an excuse not to want to use that box, they may or may not use as an excuse not to use the box. Either way, they're doing us a favor. And we know that as many as 13% of cats, maybe higher, will fail to use the litter box to urinate in at some point in their lives. And the statistics are probably higher than that. It's really an oddity to expect a cat to use the box, and they really are very gracious to amuse us by you selecting it. The only reason that they use it is because it probably sort of, kind of, in a remote way, resembles what they would be using outside in the world. If we go back to our Egyptian Mao, we know that cats originated way, 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 way back when in North Africa. And the original wildcat, the Felis libica, was the African wildcat, most likely the ancestor of our own cats today, of all the breeds and shapes and sizes that we know and love, all probably came from this African wildcat that still exists today, by the way. And so it's a desert habitat for the most part, savanna and desert, and mostly loose sand type soil or dry soil, and litter boxes kind of look like that. And so they're doing us a favor, really, either way.
And cats, unlike dogs, will bury their scat, so their poop, and that goes back to their hunting, is that correct? Trying to not let their prey know that they're out there?
Kind of, sort of, not really.
Not really. See, I'm learning something. Huh.
There are some stools that are buried and some that are not. Not all urine is buried and some is. Cats urinate and defecate for two reasons. The first one is purely to get it out. they have a full bladder or a full bowel, and they are using the environment as a latrine. Many of those will be covered. However, if they're urinating or defecating to mark that territory, they will probably not cover it. The question is, which one are they doing in our homes? When they're using a litter box, they are voiding in a latrine. But to ask them to use urine or stool exclusively in the box without using it to mark territory really goes against every fiber of a cat's being, because it's totally normal, desirable, and important for them to mark their territory. Part of it is a non-specific anxiety-releasing mechanism. In other words, they do it when they're stressed out, urinate or defecate, and it makes them feel immediately better because they've placed their scent and identified it with their environment. Sometimes they have a specific stressor. Maybe another housemate is chasing them around. Maybe a new cat has come into the territory if they're an outdoor cat. Maybe there's a dog down the street that chased them. So all of these things might be reasons for a cat, indoor or out, to mark their territories. But it's possible, as you say, that there are cases where they will cover their scent so that they're not going to deter, so they won't discourage a predator or a prey from detecting them. But more often than not, it's simply latrine versus marking. Most cats who are on a hunting expedition will have voided long before they start out.
Well, I love talking to these specialists such as yourself, Dr. Schwartz, because I always learn so much. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, veterinary behaviors will typically say you should have one cat box per cat and one from the home. So right now I have two cats, so I should theoretically have three cat boxes in my home.
Right. We came.
That's a lot of cat boxes.
It's a lot of cat boxes, and there, I think there is like a critical mass of cat boxes for any home. But the golden rule that has been generally accepted is two boxes plus one per cat. One box plus one per cat. So even if you have a one cat household, you should still have two boxes. Let's look at that one cat household to start with. We know that some cats will only use one box, but many would prefer to have two. Some cats like to urinate in one and defecate in another. some cats like to urinate and defecate in one place in the morning and urinate and defecate in a completely different place in the evening. Some cats will change from day to day, maybe Monday, Wednesday, Friday, but like the one that's in the bathroom, and Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, they're going to use the one in the basement, and then on Sunday, well, you know, it's hit or miss. So we need to give them, as I mentioned earlier, every excuse to use that box, because there are so many reasons for them not to. And if we have an alternative for them to use when they kind of have a hankering to use a different box, then we're hedging our bet that they will continue to use a box somewhere. And it's always better to err on the side of caution and have a backup box in place just in case. If you have two cats, then we would suggest three boxes for the same reason. I think once you get over four or five cats in a home, it almost doesn't matter how many boxes, you know, beyond that, you know, six or seven boxes you have. I think that, you know, we know for sure that if you have seven cats or more, you are almost certain to have house soiling issues. Seven cats or less, you might get away with it. But really, two cats or more, or even one cat, could decide not to use the boxes. Sometimes it's just a question of luck and how dedicated your cats are to using a box or not. But there are a lot of things that we can do as well to make sure that the cats do want to use those boxes. And those things include placement and hygiene and traffic flow and just personal individual preference on the part of the cats.
Well, I know I prefer right now to get more information, Dr. Schwartz, from you on cat boxes, because I think it is the number one behavioral issue that people come into my practice with. But we need to take a short break. We'll be right back with Dr. Stephanie Schwartz, a board-certified veterinary behaviorist, talking about those finicky felines and why we love them. We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Love your pets but wish their medications were a lot less expensive? They are at 1-800-PetMeds. You'll not only save on flea and heartworm medications, but on prescriptions for arthritis, incontinence, thyroid, and more. And you get fast service, free shipping, and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, our licensed pharmacists ensure accuracy, monitor drug interaction, and more. See why over 5 million people have trusted their pet's health to 1-800-PetMeds, America's largest pet pharmacy. Call now or order online.
Go to PetMeds.com/doctor, D-O-C-T-O-R, to get 10% off any order and free shipping on orders of $39 or more at PetMeds.com.
I play tennis because I love to. But inside, I want to win. Take away the court, the net. I might not be a player, but I'll always be a competitor. Lady Foot Locker understands that.
Lady Foot Locker, the first to carry Adidas off-court shoes and the gear that goes with them.
If you play your best, there's no regret.
Lady Foot Locker, one place, every woman.
Go to ladyfootlocker.com and enter the code AFDOC1LF to get 10% off any order of $50 or more. Or enter the code AFDOC2LF to get 15% off any order of $75 or more at ladyfootlocker.com.
Celebrate your special occasion and give her this classic semi-eternity band created with 1-carat brilliant diamonds, channel set in 14-carat white gold. Exclusively yours from ice.com. Free shipping over $150, free returns, and 30-day money-back guarantee.
Go to ice.com and use promo code ACTFP and get 20% off your purchase. Or use promo code ADTFP and get 20% off at diamond.com. Ice.com or diamond.com. Get 20% off from Pet Life Radio.
This year, Americans are expected to spend a jaw-dropping $36 billion on their pets. From lighted leashes to high-end spa products, the discriminating pet owner can find just about anything to pamper his or her pet. Hi, this is Michelle Fern. Join me every week for Best Bets for Pets, where we'll talk about the latest pet products and talk to the companies that make them. Best Bets for Pets, every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets. On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Schwartz, okay, what do we do? You're talking about we have to have hygiene and we have all these kitty boxes. It sounds like we should really just rip up the carpet and put sand down on the ground. We'd probably be better off. Because I've had a cat myself who peed in my luggage as it was packed and I was about to head out the door, who's peed on furniture, who's done all these things. And yes, he was my stress monkey, and I felt so, so sorry for this kid, and I tried so many things. But okay, go through cat boxes. What type of litter is the best litter for most cats?
Okay, are you ready for this?
Go for it.
The best litter to use is the one that your cat will want to use. The best cat box is the cat box that your cat likes. How often should you clean that box? As often as your cat likes it to be cleaned. Now, I'm not being facetious here. It's really true. The best box is the one your cat's going to use.
So open or closed doesn't make a difference.
Well, it kind of does, but cats are individuals, and individuals have their own individual preferences. Some cats don't like covered boxes, and some cats really do. Some cats don't care what kind of litter is in the box. It could be crystals, it could be clumping, it could be regular clay, it could be shredded newspaper. They wouldn't care. Some cats will look at a box that another cat has recently stepped in and will never use it again. It's an individual inclination. And so the trick is to use what we do know in general about cat box use, combine that with what your cat is already telling you, so to speak, by its behavior about what it likes, putting that all together to increase the chances of continued use of the litter box. There are all kinds of things manufactured out there about litter boxes. There are round boxes and triangular boxes and square boxes and rectangular boxes, and I'm sure they'll come up with different shapes eventually. And some are closed and some are opened, and the ones that are closed can be front entry or they can be hooded, where the cat has to go under and then into the box. Some actually have little steps. Some of these rounded ones with domes have little steps for the cats to go up to, kind of like a winding staircase, to go underneath the dome and then down into the box. And it can get very fancy. But
that just sounds like it's so hard, and you're pushing your luck to keep them or getting them to use that kind of a box.
Well, you know, I think the idea in that design was to decrease the trail of cat litter that is sometimes left. So I think the designers of that cat box decided they were going to put a staircase to help catch some of the trail. But I'm not sure how effective it is.
Did they ask the cat?
Probably not. You know, most of the things that are on the market for pets are marketed towards the pet parents, not the pets, because they're not the ones that are shelling out the money and making the decisions. I think that there are some general rules of thumb that we could talk about litter box choice. I think that it needs to be big enough for the cat to use. We don't want it to be so small that a 15-pound cat can barely put in 2 feet, never mind turn around and hope that he's going to void in the box instead of over the edge. So clearly size has something to do with it. If you have a really big cat, you don't want such a small box. On the other hand, if you have a big cat who's obese and probably has a little arthritis to boot, we don't want such a big box that it's going to be difficult for it to get into. So in general, I think we want to have boxes that are big enough to accommodate the cat's size comfortably and be low enough so it's not going to deter entry for either that very big or geriatric cat who might have difficulty climbing over big walls. But think, too, about little kittens. Do we really expect an 8-week-old kitten to use an adult-sized litter box with ease? Sometimes the best cat box to use is a little aluminum foil tray, maybe a little turkey roaster kind of thing where you can...
Almost like a cookie tray.
Yeah, exactly. Put a little cat litter in it and just get them used to using the cat litter. Then worry about what kind of container they can comfortably get into. We can even use some of these under-the-bed storage bins, you know, or Tupperware containers, depending on how...
Or the lid of the Tupperware, yeah.
Even the lid of the cat box.
Great ideas that you're talking about. But is it cruel to then keep this cat indoors? Because it sounds as though, wow, they're doing us the favor to use this cat box. Should we really just let all our cats go outside?
I think that the day of letting our cats go out is long gone in most urban and suburban areas. For people who are still living in rural areas, most pets wander around still, and they recognize the risks involved. But I think that living in an urban or suburban area, particularly with the rise of coyote predation, for example, cats are disappearing left, right, and center in coyote areas. The number of cars has risen dramatically in the last 20, 30 years. I think it makes no sense to let cats out. Is it cruel to let them out, or is it cruel to keep them in? In my opinion, I think there are pros and cons to both of those living situations. But overall, I would say that it's probably more kind to keep them indoors, where we at least have a chance of giving them a quality life and compensating, if we do it right, for some of the things that they would be missing outside.
Another question that people times will bring to me would be, okay, I've had one cat for years and maybe it had a litter mate and they seem to be good friends and it died, or I'm going to be going to work now and I don't want my cat to be alone. Can I bring another cat into the home? And for instance, I have a female. Should I get another female or should I get a male cat? Is there any, I know they're all individuals, but is there any kind of rule of thumb as to what would be the best to try to get a couple cats together, or should we just leave them by themselves?
You know, it's always a question of what the cat wants and what we think the cat wants. I think that's the first question. A cat may be perfectly happy to be alone, but we project our own notion of loneliness onto the cat and then assume that they must be lonely. In general, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. If your cat seems perfectly happy and you have no problem, why is it necessary to complicate things in life? If, on the other hand, you want to get another cat because you want another cat, that's a different question. What we end up doing, I think, for dogs and for cats, is imposing our choices on them. If we decide that we think they need another cat or we want another cat, either way, we're going to be imposing our choice of housemate onto them. And if we really knew the answer to the question of what's the best housemate to get for our resident cat, then a lot of these online dating services would actually be successful. But they're not doing too well from what I've heard, although their ads say differently. I still think that there's a certain amount of magic in the world that we're just not meant to understand. and yet we all hope for it. Now, would your cat be able to select its own housemate if you brought it down to the shelter and showed it a few cats in front of cages? Probably not. It's probably not a good idea. They probably just freak out and not have a good impression no matter what. But I think in general, if you have a cat who is not used to living with a housemate, if you've had a cat who has lived all its life or since you've had it with no companion, it's probably best to leave it alone. Cats need to be socialized to other cats from a very young age, and it's much younger than it is in dogs, between 3 to 6 or 7 weeks tops. That means by the time you pick up your 8-week-old kitten, the neurological window has shut on how well it can ever become socialized to cats or dogs or people of all shapes and sizes. So if you've raised your cat or acquired an adult cat, and you don't know what its social history is, it's going to be a risk no matter what you do. Sometimes you get lucky, and sometimes the magic is there. It could be between two males. It could be between a very old female and a very young female. We don't really know. It's, again, comes back to that quality of magic and what exactly is compatibility anyway. We can have two kittens together raised from the same litter that will grow up to be arch enemies. And even though that's not always going to happen, it's still a risk. I think that if you have an older cat who's been living with a housemate that just died, for example, or roommates that split up and each had a pet and they moved on, if you decide to bring in another pet into that situation, no matter what choice you make, because the choice is going to be yours, not the pet's, the way you introduce it to the resident pet is probably more important than the choice of the pet.
That is exactly going to be my next question. So you've decided you want that new pet, you bring it home, and it's the exorcist cat that you find as your the resident kitty. The head flips around 4 times and says, I want nothing to do with you. How do you try to have that dating service, make that perfect match?
Well, here's the thing. What most people do is they bring that cat carrier home with the new kitty in it, and they open the door in the middle of the living room and say,
surprise!
Here you go.
I brought you a friend.
Welcome to your new home. And then you look up to see the resident cat hanging by its toenails from the ceiling and wonder why. You know, it's probably not a really good thing to do. For dogs, we would recommend introducing them on neutral territory, but for indoor cats, the best thing to do is to delay the face-to-face introduction for as long as you possibly can. Take that cat carrier, have it in a room already prepared, if possible, with its own litter box, a new litter box, food and water, and a nice place to sleep where the owner, you, will go to visit frequently and spend some time just getting to know the new kitty without the complication of any other competition from a resident cat. Just let that new cat chill and get used to a safe zone where it can just unwind and relax and get used to the smells and the sounds of the new house. Get used to developing a relationship with the new owner. Then worry about how it's going to get used to the new cat. And I probably wouldn't allow them to even see each other for the first month, maybe longer, depending on what their histories are.
Wow, a full month?
At least. If it's a kitten, a really young kitten, sometimes you can let it out a little bit earlier for very short spurts. And it's not that the resident cat won't know that they're there. Of course they will. But at least it won't be shoved in their face as an insult. Remember that we're bringing in a cat who is unfamiliar and is a complete territorial intruder. What we don't want to do is add insult to injury. So the more gradual they can become accustomed to the new housemate, the better the prognosis will be that they'll be able to coexist peacefully.
Well, I have a feeling there's many a parent who said, you know, I should have done that with my 3-year-old child when I brought home the baby. The same kind of way that their little noses get bent out of shape, kitty whiskers can get bent out of shape when you bring in that new kitten or adult cat. This is great information, Dr. Schwartz. I thoroughly appreciate it. And there is so much more that I think we can talk about that we haven't touched on. Would you be willing to come back as a guest sometime?
I would love to. This is fun.
great. We've been chatting right now with Dr. Stephanie Schwartz. She is a board-certified veterinary behaviorist, talking all about those little finicky felines. She will be back as a guest talking about dogs, so do stay tuned for new information on how you can be the best pet parent that you can be. Thanks for listening. This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz with The Pet Doctor. We'll be back next week. Take care.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.